Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Betrayal Broker, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Valor for Sale. They say war makes heroes, that it forges men in fire, strips them to their essence, and tests their mettle in ways nothing else can. They say combat reveals a man's true nature. That's bullshit. I know because I've seen the truth. War doesn't make heroes. It manufactures them. It fabricates valor the same way a Hollywood director crafts a war movie, scripted, rehearsed, staged for effect. The difference? My work never made it to the big screen. It stayed hidden, whispered in back rooms, carried out in the blood-soaked shadows where desperation and ambition collide. Some men crave glory. Others crave safety. I gave them both. For the right price, I could turn a coward into a warrior. I could choreograph a skirmish, paint a battlefield with just the right amount of controlled chaos, and let my clients dance in the flames, close enough to feel the heat, but never close enough to burn. It started simple. A soldier in a special operations unit, someone who wanted to move up in the ranks, but didn't have the stomach for real combat, paid me $50,000 to arrange an incident. A firefight that looked authentic, a moment of bravery in the midst of chaos. Just enough to earn a Valor Medal. It worked. His silver star pinned neatly on his chest, he gave me a nod during a high-profile ceremony, a silent acknowledgement of the exchange we both knew had happened. He got his promotion. I got rich. Word spread fast. The floodgates opened. It wasn't long before entire squads started coming to me, their ambitions outweighing their courage. Officers who needed a final act of heroism before retirement, snipers who wanted confirmed kills without the risk, medics who needed a battlefield miracle to secure a cushy Pentagon desk job. I gave them exactly what they wanted. For years, it was perfect. The encounters were controlled, precise. I had my contacts, disillusioned fighters on the other side, who didn't give a fuck about ideology. To them, the Taliban was just another employer. They didn't care who paid, as long as they were getting paid. I made sure the encounters were just dangerous enough. A few rounds fired, maybe a well-placed explosion for effect. Never enough to kill anyone. Never enough to raise suspicions. Just enough to get the right names and the right reports, to ensure the right people walked away looking like war gods. No one got hurt. No one died. Until tonight. The convoy moved through the valley like a funeral procession. Two Humvees in front, one in the rear, and Markinson's squad sandwiched in the middle. I sat beside him in the lead truck, watching as he adjusted his vest, the glow of the dashboard lights making his face look almost serene. "You sure about this?" he asked, his voice barely above a murmur. "Always," I replied, checking my watch. His hands flexed against the rifle in his lap. He wasn't scared. Not exactly. But he was thinking about it, about what it would mean when this was over, when the reports were filed, when the brass back home hailed him as a war hero. He was already picturing the moment. The staged ambush was supposed to happen here, a stretch of road choked by rocky cliffs, the perfect bottleneck. It would be textbook. A burst of gunfire. A grenade tossed for effect. A timed retreat by the enemy, just close enough for Markinson and his men to save the day. I had gone over every detail. Every second was accounted for. This was a sure thing. And then the world exploded. The first RPG tore through the night like a comet, streaking past our lead Humvee and slamming into the rear truck with a sickening boom. The shockwave ripped through the convoy, the force of the blast knocking me sideways as the Humvee lurched violently. Dust and fire bloomed like a nightmare, choking the air, turning the valley into hell itself. Markinson barely had time to turn his head before the second RPG hit. And this time, it didn't miss. The truck erupted, a fireball swallowing metal and flesh alike. The shockwave sent debris flying, shrapnel slicing through the night like jagged stars. I hit the dirt before I even realized I was moving, my ears ringing, my breath coming in short, panicked gasps. This wasn't right. This wasn't scripted. I was supposed to be hearing blanks. Staged gunfire. Controlled bursts. Not the thunderous roar of automatic weapons unloading in rapid succession. Not the telltale screams of men actually dying. I crawled toward the wreckage, my heart hammering against my ribs. Markinson was gone. Not dead. Gone. There was nothing left of him but the scorched stump of an arm hanging from the twisted metal of the Humvee's door. The Taliban had come. Not the actors I had paid for. Not the mercenaries who knew their role. The real ones. And they weren't here to play pretend. They were here to kill. Chaos devoured the valley. Gunfire lit up the cliffs, the muzzle flashes carving through the darkness like lightning. I could hear the desperate screams of the remaining soldiers, their training shattering under the sudden onslaught. They didn't know. They didn't know they had walked into this. They still thought this was a real fight, thought they had just been ambushed by chance. Only I knew the truth. Only I knew that this wasn't supposed to happen. And only I knew that the men who were now dying were dying, because I had put them here. I pressed my back against a rock, gripping my side where a piece of shrapnel had torn through my jacket. My mind raced. What had gone wrong? Had my contacts betrayed me? Had the real Taliban intercepted the plan? Or worse, had they always known? I forced my breathing steady, my eyes scanning for any opening, any way out. Then, through the swirling smoke and dust, I saw him. A figure standing at the edge of the cliff. Watching. Waiting. Not shooting. Not running. Just smiling. I knew that smile. I knew that face. And in that moment, I knew. I had been set up. Chapter 2. A Deal with the Devil. There's a moment after an explosion when everything feels like it's moving in slow motion. It's not real. It's just your brain struggling to process the sudden shift from order to chaos, from safety to complete and utter hell. I was caught in that moment, lying flat on my stomach in the dirt, ears ringing so hard I thought I'd gone deaf. The air smelled like burning flesh, gunpowder, and scorched metal. I could still feel the heat of the RPG blast licking at my skin, even though the fire was a good 10 yards away. Somewhere behind me, bullets rattled against stone and metal, popping like firecrackers. The screams of dying men blended into the cacophony of war, a chorus of agony that I had never intended to hear in real life. This wasn't staged. This wasn't my operation. This was something else entirely. I forced myself up onto my elbows, my vision swimming as I took in the wreckage around me. The lead Humvee, the one I'd been in just seconds ago, was flipped onto its side, its entire front section reduced to a crumpled, flaming mess. The rear convoy vehicle was nothing but a charred skeleton, gutted by the first RPG. Markinson was gone. His squad was in disarray, half of them dead, the other half desperately returning fire at an enemy they couldn't see. And then there was me, the man who sold them to this slaughter. A figure moved through the haze. At first, I thought he was one of ours, a soldier struggling to regroup. But as the smoke shifted, I saw the silhouette of his rifle, the unmistakable curve of a foreign AK-47. My stomach turned to ice. Taliban. The real fucking Taliban. And he wasn't alone. Shadows flickered through the smoke, half-seen figures darting between rocks, taking up tactical positions. These weren't some dumbfuck insurgents firing blindly into the night. These were seasoned killers. They knew exactly what they were doing. I pressed myself into the dirt, barely daring to breathe. What the fuck had happened? I had paid for an ambush, but not this. My contacts were supposed to pretend to attack. They were supposed to fire a few rounds, let Markinson's team play hero, then disappear like ghosts. Instead, the wrong people had shown up. And now, every man in this convoy was getting ripped apart. I reached for my sidearm, but I already knew it was pointless. A pistol wasn't going to do shit against this kind of firepower. I had two options. Stay and die. Or run. I ran. The terrain was my only advantage. The valley was full of jagged rocks and uneven ground, giving me enough cover to slip away without being spotted. At least for the moment. I moved fast, low, keeping to the shadows as I darted between boulders, my breath ragged, my hands slick with sweat. I needed to get to high ground. I needed to get the fuck out of here. Behind me, the gunfire didn't let up. The Taliban had fully committed to the attack, their voices rising in triumphant shouts. I could hear the desperation in the soldiers' return fire, short, frantic bursts, the kind men fired when they knew they were losing. Another explosion rocked the valley, sending a shockwave through the ground beneath me. I stumbled, barely catching myself against a rock, before scrambling forward. And then, A hand clamped around my throat. My world flipped. My back slammed against the ground. The wind ripped from my lungs. The Taliban fighter loomed over me, his rifle slung across his back, his knife already pressed against my throat. I tried to grab for my pistol, but his knee dug into my chest, pinning me down like an insect under his boot. His breath smelled like blood and unwashed fabric. His eyes burned with something I recognized instantly. Amusement. No more running, American. His voice was low, almost mocking. I stared up at him, my mind racing. Think, think. Two more fighters approached from the smoke, rifles at the ready. They weren't shooting. They weren't in a hurry. They already had me. The man on top of me leaned in closer, his knife pressing harder against my skin. You run well, he mused, his accent thick, but his English perfect. But you can't outrun fate. I gritted my teeth. I can outbuy it. The fighter tilted his head. His knife didn't move. I pushed forward, my voice steady. You don't want me dead. I can make you rich. A slow grin spread across his face. He didn't believe me. But he was curious. That was my only opening. Take me to your boss, I said, forcing calm into my voice. I can give him something better than bodies. For a long moment, he just studied me. Then he nodded to the others. Bring him. The next thing I knew, the butt of a rifle slammed into the side of my head, and my world went black. Chapter 3 Preview, The Warlord's Price. I woke up with my hands tied behind my back. The room was dark, small, reeking of sweat and gasoline. My head throbbed, the taste of blood thick in my mouth. I wasn't alone. Across from me, lounging in a wooden chair, was a man I recognized instantly. The Warlord. The man I had never wanted to meet in person. His eyes gleamed in the dim light as he watched me struggle against my bindings, his expression unreadable. Then he spoke. They paid you to make them heroes. His voice was almost gentle. I swallowed. Yes. He smiled. Then let's make them martyrs. Chapter 3. The Warlord's Price. Pain was the first thing I felt. A deep, throbbing ache in my skull, pulsing in sync with my heartbeat. My mouth was dry, my lips cracked. Blood mine, coated my tongue, the metallic taste thick and sour. I tried to move, but my arms were tied behind my back, the rough bite of rope cutting into my wrists. My shoulders screamed in protest, stiff from being bound too long in the same position. My legs were spread in front of me, ankles shackled. I wasn't going anywhere. The room was small, barely more than a shack, the walls lined with crude wooden planks that didn't quite meet, leaving slivers of moonlight slicing through the gaps. The air was thick, hot, stagnant, suffocating, reeking of sweat, gasoline, and the unmistakable stench of death. And I wasn't alone. A man sat across from me, legs crossed, a cigarette dangling lazily from his fingers. His eyes glowed in the dim light, studying me like a scientist might study a trapped rat. His expression wasn't cruel, but it wasn't kind either. It was patient, like he was waiting for something. I knew him. Everyone in this part of the world knew him. Hajar al-Zahir. A name spoken in fear. A name that made grown men whisper and change subjects. Warlord. Kingpin. Executioner. The man who had just destroyed my entire operation. They paid you to make them heroes. His voice was soft, almost thoughtful. The kind of voice you might hear from a man reminiscing about an old lover or a childhood memory. I swallowed hard, my throat dry. Yes. His lips twitched, almost like he found that funny. He took a long drag from his cigarette, then exhaled, the smoke curling between us like a ghost. Then let's make them martyrs. A chill ran through me. He wasn't bluffing. I had spent years playing the middleman in a game where no one was supposed to die. I had danced between cowards and killers, pulling strings, making sure everyone walked away alive. But that game was over. This wasn't a business transaction anymore. This was punishment. And I was the product. The weight of the dead. Hajar gestured with his cigarette, and two men stepped forward from the shadows. One of them dropped a bag in front of me. It landed with a sickening, wet thud. The fabric was already dark, soaked through. I didn't need to ask what was inside. I already knew. Markinson. His men. The ones who had paid me to make them legends. The ones who had died screaming my name instead. One of the fighters knelt, unzipping the bag. The stench hit me first. That awful mix of blood, sweat, and something worse. The smell of bodies left too long in the heat, of meat turning rotten. Then I saw what was left of them. Ripped apart by bullets. Limbs barely hanging on. One man's skull had been caved in, his face unrecognizable, just a mess of blood and bone. Another was missing an arm entirely, his torso riddled with shrapnel. I felt my stomach twist. I had seen death before. But not like this. Not my own handiwork. Not up this close. Hajar watched my face carefully. They thought they were invincible, he murmured, almost amused. They thought the world would remember them as warriors. He nudged one of the corpses with the toe of his boot. But they were just boys. Boys who paid the wrong man. I swallowed hard, my mind racing. I needed to think. I needed to get ahead of this. It wasn't my fault, I croaked. Hajar's eyebrow lifted. No. The deal was for a controlled ambush. Someone switched the players. This wasn't me. He studied me for a long moment. Then he laughed. It wasn't a loud laugh. It was quiet. Dangerous. Like he was amused that I still thought I had a say in what happened next. Does it matter? He asked. I opened my mouth to speak, to beg if I had to, but he silenced me with a sharp wave of his hand. These men were arrogant fools, but they had families. Mothers. Wives. Children. And now they have nothing. His gaze darkened. And it is because of you. He let that hang in the air. A heavy, suffocating truth. I had nothing to say. Because he was right. The broadcast. Hajar leaned forward, his elbows resting on his knees. Your people think you're missing, yes? I clenched my jaw, saying nothing. His grin widened. Good. Because you are going to send them a message. One of his men stepped forward, holding out my phone. The blood drained from my face. You will tell them who you are. You will tell them what you did. And then, he sat back, exhaling smoke through his nose. We will decide what happens next. I swallowed, my pulse pounding. This was it. My face, my name. It would be burned into every intelligence database from here to Langley. There would be no way out after this. If I sent that message, I was done. And they knew it. Which meant I had only one card left to play. I took a slow, shaky breath. And then I did the only thing I could. I lied. You don't want me dead. Hajar didn't react. You want money. I pressed. I can make you rich. A flicker of amusement danced in his eyes. Go on. My heart hammered. I had his attention. Now I just had to make him believe me. Asterisk the people I work with? They're powerful. They have accounts in places no government can touch. If you let me live, if you let me arrange the transfer. I swallowed. I can get you 10 million. Right now. Silence. The room shifted. The air thickened. Hajar leaned back, considering. Then, without breaking eye contact, he reached into his vest. My pulse spiked. Was this it? Was this where he killed me, just for the fun of it? Then, he pulled out a knife. Not to kill me. Not yet. But to slice through my wrist bindings. The ropes fell away. I swallowed, flexing my fingers, feeling the blood rush back into my hands. Hajar smiled. 10 million, American. His voice was soft. And you live. I nodded. Even as I knew. This deal would never end with me walking away. Chapter 4, A Wolf Among Jackals. There's a special kind of silence that follows a deal with the devil. It's not relief, not victory, just the temporary absence of death. I sat in the dim, suffocating heat of Hajar's bunker, rubbing my wrists where the ropes had been. The skin was raw, angry welts marking where I had been bound. My fingers ached from lack of circulation, and my body screamed from the hours of restraint. But I was alive. For now. The warlord sat across from me, arms folded, watching me with the cold amusement of a man who had seen 1,000 like me before. His men hovered nearby, their rifles slung casually over their shoulders, as if they were waiting for him to change his mind and put a bullet in me. I didn't let my fear show. Fear was weakness, and weakness got men butchered in places like this. So I did what I did best. I played my role. I acted like I had control. The money will take time to move, I said, my voice steady. Hajar exhaled a long stream of cigarette smoke, eyes never leaving mine. Time is not something you have, American. I forced a tight smile. Neither is trust. The room shifted. One of his men tensed, gripping his AK a little tighter. But Hajar? He just watched. I leaned forward slightly, careful to keep my voice level. You want $10 million? You want me to pull off a wire transfer from a black account without a trace? I shook my head. That's not something I can just do in an hour. The kind of money you're asking for? The people behind it? They don't play like that. It has to be gradual. It has to be clean. Otherwise, the whole thing burns. I let that sink in. Hajar was ruthless, but he wasn't stupid. He knew the power of money better than anyone. He knew that fast money got flagged. So tell me, American, he murmured, his fingers tapping against his knee. How do you propose we do this? The tension in the room hung like a noose around my throat. I swallowed. And I lied. The cell. There's an account, I said, keeping my breathing even. A deep freeze account, offshore, untraceable. It was set up for emergencies like this. People in my line of work don't survive long without an escape fund. Hajar's eyebrow lifted slightly, a flicker of amusement crossing his face. An escape fund, he repeated. I nodded. 10 million, sitting there untouched. The kind of money that never gets questioned because it belongs to ghosts. The warlord leaned back in his chair, exhaling smoke through his nose. And how do we get this money? We need a secure line. A coded request. I let my eyes flick to my sat phone on the table. It has to be handled carefully. If we spook the system, it locks down. No transfer. No money. Hajar didn't speak for a moment. He just watched me. He was measuring me. Weighing the risk. The warlord had killed for far less than $10 million. He could slit my throat, have his men dig through my contacts, force one of my brokers to handle the transfer. But that wasn't his style. He liked control. He liked leverage. How long? He asked finally. I pretended to think. 12 hours, I said. Maybe less if we do it right. Hajar nodded slowly, his fingers drumming against the armrest of his chair. Then he stood. Take him to the compound. One of his men grabbed me by the arm, yanking me to my feet. I didn't fight it. I couldn't. I was still in their world. And I had just bought myself a very small window of time to figure out a real escape. The ride to hell. They stuffed me in the back of a beaten-up Toyota Land Cruiser, the kind you saw in every Third World War zone, bullet holes in the doors, dust caked on the windshield. For fighters rode with me, armed to the teeth. Silent. I stared out the window as we drove, the landscape flashing past in jagged shapes under the moonlight. Endless desert. Sharp cliffs. No civilization in sight. They were taking me deeper. Not closer to freedom. Closer to my grave. I clenched my fists in my lap, forcing myself to breathe evenly. I needed a plan. I needed to stay ahead of this. If I didn't, I was dead. The compound. Hajar's compound was carved into the side of a mountain. A fortress, built with stolen money, stolen weapons, stolen lives. It wasn't just a hideout, it was an empire. Guards patrolled the walls, their rifles slung lazily over their shoulders. A pair of machine gun nests flanked the entrance. The whole place was rigged with defenses, a self-sustaining military hub in the middle of nowhere. And I had just been delivered right to the heart of it. They pulled me out of the truck, shoved me forward. Move. I didn't resist. Not yet. They marched me through the compound, past stacks of crates, ammo, explosives, stolen military gear. Past men counting cash, sorting weapons, laughing in the dim glow of lanterns. This wasn't a ragtag group of fighters. This was a machine. And I had walked straight into it. The deal, or the execution. They brought me to a small room, dimly lit, nothing but a table and a satellite phone waiting for me. Hajar walked in behind me, arms folded. Time to earn your life, American. He gestured to the phone. Make the call. I sat down slowly, my pulse pounding. This was it. I had 12 hours to either move that money or make them believe I was moving it. And I had no intention of doing either. I reached for the phone, took a slow breath. And then, I dialed. Not my broker. Not my contacts. The U.S. military emergency response line. The warlord's men couldn't understand English. But they would understand one thing very clearly. The airstrike that was coming. Chapter 5. No honor among thieves. There are moments in life where you realize you're standing at the very edge of the abyss. You can feel the drop beneath your feet, the pull of gravity whispering a simple, brutal truth. One wrong step, and it's over. That was me, sitting in a dimly lit room inside Hajar al-Zahir's fortress, surrounded by heavily armed killers, a satellite phone in my hand, and a lie so dangerous it could either save my life or ensure my brutal, slow execution. I had dialed the number. Not my broker. Not the offshore accounts I had lied about. I had called the U.S. military emergency response line. And I had seconds to make this work. I pressed the receiver to my ear, heartbeat hammering, waiting for the click of a connection. Hajar stood across from me, arms folded, his dark eyes locked onto my face like a predator watching its prey squirm. His men stood in a loose semicircle behind him, their fingers resting against the triggers of their rifles. No one spoke. No one moved. This was my moment. I had lied my way into this mess. Now, I had to lie my way out. the call, a sharp click on the other end, a voice. "This is U.S. Military Emergency Command, identify." I cut them off before they could finish. My voice snapped through the line, fast, urgent, but perfectly controlled. "Requesting priority wire confirmation, clearance code Alpha-749er. Protocol 321, direct asset allocation, immediate confirmation required." I didn't know if Protocol 321 existed, but I said it like I fucking did. On the other end, silence. A hesitation. Then, "Standby for verification." I exhaled as quietly as I could. "One shot. One shot." Hajar raised an eyebrow. He didn't understand English, but he knew tension when he heard it. "Problem?" he asked. I shook my head. "Just authorization delays. The money is locked up tight." He studied me for a long moment. Then he nodded, his patience holding, for now. I turned my focus back to the phone, gripping the receiver tight. The military officer on the other end came back. "Alpha-749er, your request is unverified. State your full clearance authorization and call sign." Fuck. I needed to buy time. I lowered my voice. "Immediate confirmation. The asset is under duress." A pause. Then, alarm crept into the officer's tone. "Under duress? Confirm security breach." I closed my eyes. This was it. One lie. One roll of the dice. Sierra Echo Charlie. Confirm breach. Hostile control. Request immediate direct intervention. I forced myself not to react. My pulse was pounding, my breathing steady only by sheer fucking willpower. The silence stretched for what felt like forever. Then, the voice came back. "Understood. Acknowledging Sierra Echo Charlie. Tactical intervention, response en route. Confirmation will arrive in 5 minutes. Click. The line went dead. I placed the phone back onto the table, my fingers steady even though my insides were fucking screaming. 5 minutes. The U.S. military had just locked onto this signal, and Hajar had no idea that I had just signed a death warrant, for all of us. The waiting game. Hajar took a slow drag from his cigarette, watching me. Well, I met his gaze. Expression neutral. Controlled. Cold. Transfer initiated. Processing through secondary channels. Should be cleared in 5 minutes. His lips curved into a slow, knowing grin. Good. His men relaxed, but only slightly. Rifles were still in hand, tension still thick in the air. Hajar exhaled, tapping ash onto the floor. "You see, American? You had no reason to be afraid. You live today." I forced a nod. "Today." Inside, my gut was twisting into knots. 5 minutes. That's how long I had before the military pinpointed this location. Before drones, airstrikes, or special forces rained hell down on this compound. I had no control over what came next. I just knew one thing. I had to be somewhere else when it happened. The escape. I needed a distraction. Something big enough to give me an opening. Something that would pull Hajar's attention just long enough. And I saw it. The fuel drums stacked against the far wall. Thick metal barrels. Labeled in Arabic. Gasoline. Diesel. Explosives. I kept my breathing steady. Kept my eyes from flicking toward them too obviously. I couldn't tip my hand too soon. "How much longer?" Hajar asked. 3 minutes. He nodded, standing from his chair, stretching his arms slightly. "I'm looking forward to seeing that balance in my account." I nodded. "Me too." And then I moved. It wasn't a grand gesture. Not some cinematic explosion of action. It was precise. Calculated. I knocked over the lantern. It wasn't dramatic. No sudden crash, no immediate flames. Just a soft thunk as the old glass lamp toppled, its oil spilling onto the stone floor. Hajar's eyes flicked toward it, just for a second. That was all I needed. I lunged. Fist clenched, I drove it into the throat of the nearest guard. He let out a strangled gasp, his rifle slipping from his grasp as he staggered back. I snatched the pistol from his belt and swung. Crack. The butt of the gun slammed into the side of another fighter's skull. He crumpled, his weapon clattering against the stone. The room erupted. Shouts, chaos, confusion. And then, the fire. The oil from the lantern had spread across the floor, snaking toward the fuel barrels. And in an instant, boom. The explosion ripped through the room, a violent shockwave that sent bodies flying. Smoke choked the air. A second explosion followed, then a third, the force of the blasts tearing through the walls. The compound shook. I didn't stop to watch. I ran. The fall of the warlord. Gunfire erupted behind me. Shouts, screams, panic. The compound was on fire. and above the chaos, the sound of distant rotors. The U.S. military had arrived. I didn't stop running. I sprinted through the smoke, dodging bodies, leaping over wreckage, my lungs burning from the heat. Behind me, the air split with the first thunderous roar of an incoming airstrike. And in that moment, I knew Hajar al-Zahir was done. The king of the desert had finally been played. By me. Chapter 6. No honor among thieves. I ran like a man with hell at his back. Because I was. Hajar's compound was turning into a graveyard. Fire consumed the eastern wing, sending thick, black smoke into the sky. The scent of burning fuel and scorched flesh filled the air, clinging to my clothes, sticking to the back of my throat like bile. Gunfire rattled through the corridors behind me. Shouted commands in Arabic, panic screams from the wounded, the heavy thudding of boots against stone as Hajar's men scrambled to regain control. They wouldn't. Not this time. Not with the airstrike incoming. The first explosion had been my doing. The rest? The inevitable consequence of fucking with the U.S. military. They were coming. And when they got here, they wouldn't be asking questions. They'd wipe this place off the map. I just had to make sure I wasn't still inside when that happened. The corridor of fire. The hallway ahead was a nightmare. The blast from the fuel barrels had ripped apart the ceiling, sending chunks of debris crashing to the ground. The stone walls were cracked, flames licking at the edges, making the passage a hellish gauntlet. I didn't have a choice. I sprinted through, lungs burning, dodging the collapsed beams and shattered glass. The heat was unbearable, sweat dripping down my face, my shirt clinging to me like a second skin. A burst of gunfire cracked over my shoulder. I hit the ground instinctively, rolling behind a half-destroyed pillar, just as bullets tore through the space I had been standing in. I twisted, gun raised, finger on the trigger. A fighter stormed into the hall, rifle up, eyes locked onto me. I squeezed off a shot before he could. The bullet caught him in the throat. A short, sharp gasp. Then he crumpled, blood pooling beneath him. I didn't stop. Didn't think. I kept moving. The courtyard massacre. I burst through a side door and into the open courtyard. It was carnage. The entire compound was in chaos. Fighters scrambling for weapons, others shouting at each other, trying to organize an evacuation. Some were already fleeing toward the mountains. Others, the loyal ones, the ones too stupid to run, were setting up defensive positions, aiming their rifles at the night sky. They knew what was coming. Knew the U.S. wasn't going to send in a negotiation team. They were preparing to die. In the distance, I could hear it. The low, mechanical thrum of approaching helicopters. Hajar's men were readying for a last stand. And I was trapped in the middle of it. I kept low, darting behind a stack of sandbags, scanning for an escape route. I had to get out of the kill zone before the full force of the military hit. Then I saw him. Hajar. The last stand of Hajar al-Zahir. He stood in the center of the courtyard, surrounded by his most loyal fighters. Even now, even in the face of certain death, he looked calm. Almost amused. He barked an order in Arabic, and one of his men dragged someone forward. I squinted through the smoke, and my stomach dropped. It was one of the surviving American soldiers from Markinson's team. A young kid, maybe 20, 21 at most, his face bloodied, his hands tied behind his back. He looked barely conscious, his uniform tattered, dust and sweat smeared across his skin. My gut twisted into a knot. I had gotten everyone in his unit killed. And now he was about to die too. Because of me. I felt my grip tighten around the pistol. I should have left. Should have kept moving, gotten the fuck out while I still had a chance. But I couldn't. Not this time. I owed him that much. The final betrayal. Hajar pulled a knife from his belt, turning it slowly between his fingers. You were right, American, he called out, voice echoing over the courtyard. There was never any honor among thieves. Then he grabbed the soldier by the hair and yanked his head back, pressing the blade to his throat. And yet you thought you could outbetray me? The kid whimpered, his breath hitching. Hajar grinned. This is your fault. My heart pounded. I had seconds to act. Seconds before he slit the kid's throat and let him bleed out in the dirt. I made my choice. I stood from behind the sandbags, gun raised. Hajar! I shouted. His head snapped toward me, eyes narrowing. I was wondering when you'd show yourself. I took a slow step forward, ignoring the fact that a dozen rifles immediately trained on me. Let him go. Hajar chuckled. And why would I do that? I took another step. Closer. Because you need a hostage. And I'm worth more than him. His grin widened. Oh, you think so? I nodded. I'm the reason you lost everything tonight. I'm the one who burned your house down. You don't want to kill him. I lowered my gun, just slightly. You want to kill me? Silence. Then, Hajar laughed. You always were a slippery little bastard, weren't you? The blade wavered against the kid's throat. Hajar's eyes flicked to his men. To me. To the sky. The helicopters were getting closer. He was running out of time. And so was I. The sky rains fire. The first missile strike hit the far side of the compound, tearing through stone and sending a shockwave across the courtyard. The force of it knocked me off my feet, the explosion so loud it rattled my bones. Chaos. Hajar's men scattered. Some screamed orders, others ran for cover. A few started firing blindly into the sky, pointless, desperate. And Hajar? He did what he always did. He adapted. His knife flashed. I lunged. I tackled him just as the blade slashed down, knocking him away from the soldier, sending both of us crashing to the ground. Pain exploded through my ribs, but I didn't stop. I grabbed his wrist, twisted. The knife dropped. I scrambled for it, but he was faster, shoving me back, rolling to his feet. I barely had time to react before he grabbed the fallen soldier, dragging him up as a human shield. Not this time, American, he snarled. And then, a single shot cracked through the air. Hajar's body jerked. His grip loosened. He staggered. A red blossom bloomed in the center of his chest. His eyes widened. And then he fell, dead before he hit the ground. I turned. One of his own men stood behind him, rifle still raised. For the first time, there really was no honor among thieves. Chapter 7. The Devil You Owe. Smoke curled into the sky, thick and dark, a funeral shroud rising from the ruins of Hajar's empire. The ground was littered with bodies, some charred, some riddled with bullets, others crumpled like discarded puppets, their strings cut. The once mighty fortress of the warlord had become a smoldering graveyard. And I was still here. Still breathing. Still alive. But I wasn't free. Not even close. Because debts like mine, they don't just disappear. They come collecting. And they always collect in blood. The aftermath. The compound was in ruins, but the battle wasn't over, not completely. The sound of distant gunfire still echoed through the mountains, the last desperate remnants of Hajar's fighters either making a final stand or trying to escape. The helicopters had landed in the eastern courtyard, U.S. Special Forces spilling out in tactical formations, sweeping the compound, securing the perimeter. They moved with lethal precision, boots crunching over rubble, rifles raised, clearing rooms, checking for survivors. I watched from behind a half-collapsed stone pillar, the dead soldier's blood still drying on my hands. The young American I had saved, the only one left from Markinson's squad, was slumped next to me, barely conscious, his face pale from blood loss. I should have felt some twisted sense of relief. I had survived. I had gotten out. I had played my game, made my moves, and I was still standing. But I knew better. There was no escaping this. Not after what I had done. The man in the suit. The first person to reach me wasn't a medic. It wasn't a soldier, either. It was him. A man in a crisp gray suit, stepping through the wreckage like he had been expecting me. Like he had all the time in the world. His face was calm, unreadable. Clean-shaven. Eyes sharp as razors. Not military. Not officially, anyway. Agency. CIA, NSA, Black Ops. I didn't know which. It didn't matter. He wasn't here to save me. He was here to make sure I didn't leave this place alive. I knew how these things worked. I was a liability now. Too many people knew my name. Too many bodies had been left behind in my wake. The government wouldn't want to deal with the scandal. They wouldn't want me talking. They'd put a bullet in my head and call it collateral damage. The price of doing business. I forced a smirk, despite the throbbing pain in my ribs. You're a little late to the party. The man in the suit stopped a few feet away, tilting his head slightly, like he was studying an interesting specimen. On the contrary, he said, voice smooth as silk. We're right on time. He glanced down at the half-conscious soldier beside me, eyes flickering with mild curiosity. You really went through all this trouble to save one grunt. I didn't answer, because we both knew the truth. I hadn't done it for the kid. I'd done it for me. Because if I had let him die, after everything, I wouldn't have been able to live with myself. Not that it mattered. I wasn't going to live much longer anyway. The debt comes due. The man in the suit sighed, crouching down to meet my eye level. You made a mess, you know that? I shrugged. It's what I do. No, he corrected. What you do is sell lies. What you do is manufacture heroes. what you did here. He gestured at the destruction around us. This wasn't a lie. This was real. I exhaled slowly, looking past him, out at the smoking ruins of Hajar's kingdom. Yeah. A long pause. You knew this would happen. It wasn't a question. I met his gaze, my face expressionless. I had a feeling. Another pause. Then, he smiled. Not a friendly smile. Not an amused one. A cold, knowing smile. You're a hard man to kill, you know that? I smirked. I try. His smile didn't fade. So do we. And then I felt it. The pressure against the back of my skull. A gun. The final choice. The silence stretched, heavy and suffocating. The man in the suit watched me carefully, waiting for my reaction. I didn't move. Didn't flinch. I had seen this coming miles away. This was the natural conclusion to my story. No courtroom. No trial. Just a bullet in the desert. Clean. Simple. But there was one thing they hadn't counted on. I was never the kind of man to go quietly. The final gamble. I shifted slightly, just enough to tilt my head. Just enough to see the man behind me, the one holding the gun. A soldier. Young. Tense. Not an operator. Not one of the agency's ghosts. Just a grunt, following orders. And that meant he wasn't ready for what happened next. I moved fast. Twisted. Grabbed the wrist holding the gun. Before he could react, before he could squeeze the trigger. Crack. I broke his fucking arm. The pistol dropped. I caught it midair. Turned it. And aimed it at the man in the suit. His expression didn't change. He just sighed. Now that, he murmured, was stupid. I exhaled, my grip steady, my heart pounding. Yeah, I admitted. But I'm not dying today. Another pause. The rotors of the helicopters thundered overhead, kicking up dust. The sound of radio chatter crackled in the background. Teams moving, securing survivors, confirming enemy casualties. I was still holding the gun. And for the first time I saw it. A flicker of something in the agent's eyes. Annoyance. Respect. And then, he nodded. A silent agreement. You're lucky, he said, standing slowly, dusting off his suit. Someone up top still thinks you're useful. I kept my aim steady. Yeah. Yeah. He smirked. For now. Then he turned and walked away, leaving me kneeling in the dirt, surrounded by fire and death, a gun still clutched in my trembling hands. The final debt. I survived. But survival has a cost. I wasn't free. I wasn't safe. The government owned me now. They had let me live, not out of mercy, but because they weren't done with me yet. I was in their debt. And one day soon, they were going to collect.